We're here to talk about various things happening around council or councils because, and I say that because the regional council's coastal plan is closing today for submissions. It's been open for about 3 months. They haven't up. This is the first time they've updated it in like 25 years. Is that 25 the right number? They've been working.
Might even be 30.
Might be 30. Yeah, they've been working on it for 5 years. The draft. It's probably quite a huge document.
304 pages.
It doesn't feel that large for a council, in all honesty. But it covers what you could do with the water from the high tide mark out to 12 nautical miles. So, John, how can you summarise all that? Like what?
you can't, but it covers a whole range of things. So it covers things like water quality and surfing and access to the coast. Covers fisheries and aquaculture and you name it, it's connected with the coast and it's in there somewhere.
What have you been concerned about as the front man for Whangaroa Environmental Defence?
Well, maybe before I get onto that, I should mention that even the regional council itself is struggling with its own plan, so it's put in quite a long list of submissions from itself to itself. On what it wants changing.
I guess they can do that if they want to. It's their council.
So that they had that meeting last week and agreed to put them in. And as far as I'm concerned, there's things like whether they should introduce a rule to stop you dumping raw sewage half a kilometre off the coast, which seems to me, because that's what the national regulations allow. So if you've got a boat and you just want to dump your sewage overboard, then it doesn't need to be treated or anything, and so long as you're more than half a kilometre out to sea, then that, at the moment, is quite legal.
Is that an issue? I mean, the fish are all pooing in the sea.
Well, we had the protests a couple of weeks ago about the council pumping sewage on the incoming tide. And
Treated wastewater, John.
Yes.
Yes. people don't like it, yeah, but I'm asking like a question for a biologist probably or a marine scientist of some kind.
Whereas you can be half a kilometre out at the bar and dump your sewage overboard and it comes in on the incoming tide, which is significantly worse to my mind than council pumping it.
Well, yes, if it does, but does it? And does it get processed by whatever's in the water?
Well, I think that's what council would argue for their sewage, so they don't really need to treat it all that well and just pump it on the outgoing tide and that sorts it out. But then council's talking about an upgrade of, I'm trying to remember the figure now, I think it's about $7 million to add the extra treatment to the...
Is it called a membrane tank reactor or something?
Yes.
Is that the right phrase? They've put one in at Merimeri, and our councillor Lisa Thompson said she was there and the operator was showing them, like, he ran a tap out of the end of it and washed his hands in it, like he was happy for it. Like he said, that's how clean it is. So he probably wouldn't drink it, but happy to have it on his hands. So yeah. That sounds NBR, good. That sounds good. Yeah, that sounds good. And then at that point, like, if it really is that good, at that point, do you worry about where you put it?
Well, it's still all the nutrients in it, so although it hasn't got the harmful bacteria in it, it's still got all the phosphorus and nitrogen and all the other stuff that contributes to the algal blooms that we have from time to time.
Ah, okay. Should we talk about that? Have you seen the stuff on the notice board from people? People are constantly thinking they've seen sewage in the water now over the last few weeks. People have been putting up photos.
Yeah, I think that's because we've had quite a lot of wind and the wind whips up the waves, and then there's natural substances in there, which council's always saying is the reason for it. But then I remember a few years ago walking in the rain and seeing water dripping off trees, and it was forming the same sort of foam that we sometimes see along the coast. So
yeah, the last
I'm willing to believe it's natural.
Yeah, the last photo I saw was it was beside the bridge, so it was in an area where you'd get that natural sort of circling eddy current where the water just stays in the same place. But that person said that they had put it on several backpackers' notice boards and 200,000 people had seen it, and lots of people were saying they weren't going to come to Raglan because they were being told that was sewage in the water, which I was pretty sure was incorrect.
Okay, this is part of your publicity campaign, is it? Don't come to Raglan.
Not mine, no. This was someone else. No, I actually thought I wouldn't actually, like, I wouldn't do that because the local tourist industry would be kind of upset about it. And I did ask this person that question, but I didn't get a very good answer. Some people, and they're very visible on the notice board, are ready to believe anything about the council, that the council's trying to hide things from us and all that kind of thing. And there's a tendency to want to hide things from people, especially when they get quite angry about it. But given that the most recent of the two wastewater discharges on the incoming tide, no one in Raglan knew about it until the council told us, I think they've been relatively upfront at the moment.
Even some councillors are concerned that council's not telling us everything. One of the councillors said that staff appear to be acting as gatekeepers, not passing community voices and submissions on to the council.
What was this from, John? What are you looking at?
I'm looking at the policy committee. This is something I didn't send you.
Okay.
This is why you're looking puzzled. And
yes, I am. I'm usually unprepared anyway, so I can't really claim.
this was policy committee. Where are we? Oh, that's today's policy committee agenda. Yep.
Okay. So I'm not. I'm just trying to shift the screen around so it stops.
Even councillors are suspicious of council staff. But the point I was trying to make was that you can dump raw sewage just half a kilometre off the coast.
Back to that part of
the regulations, the national regulations allow for regional plans or regional coastal plans to change that. So I think that they should do, particularly around beaches like the ones that are used for surfing and swimming and all the things where you really want clean water.
Yeah. Yeah, and there is, and you're always hearing from surfers how they get little ear infections and things like. So there's issues.
Yeah, and sewage dumped at sea isn't the only source, of course, because we've also got all the animals on land, which are their sewage doesn't go through a sewage works or anything else. It just washes off the land.
See, this is the thing. Like, there used to be a time when that wasn't an issue. I guess when there were forests. And there was, that's 100% riparian management, isn't it? When you've got a forest on the land,
yes.
And then all the poo from birds and animals and what have you just gets processed in the proper way, the natural way.
Well, we didn't have cows at one time.
No, but cows would have come from a place where they were a natural part of the environment, and it just would have all been, that would have been fine too.
Because even moors wouldn't have been as large as a cow. So.
Volume wise,
yes.
yeah, but it comes back down to having a functional ecosystem, and a cow that's part of a functional ecosystem, that's not going to be a problem. And I guess riparian management is an attempt to bring back some functionality to the ecosystem.
Yeah, but we're still a long way from riparian management along many of our streams, and even where it is in place, it's not totally effective, because NIWA did a survey, I think it's probably about 5 years ago, where they found that about 60% of the wet waste got filtered by having a riparian strip.
Yeah.
The other 40% still find its way into the waterways.
What was its definition of a strip? Like, how wide?
I think they were talking about 10 metres.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, it's a big improvement, though. It's worth it. We know it's worth it because Raglan's Whangaroa Harbour had went from being like the second worst place to fish in the country to now being one of the best. So, and that's without even doing every piece of waterway coming into the harbour. It's still made a substantial difference. I think because you give nature enough help, then its own mechanisms start to kick in. I think that's what they kind of learned from that. So it's worth doing. How many people are interested in this idea that you can take your boat out and poo in the water? That's not what you do. Just the boats are there.
it seems to me that if the government allows regulations to vary it, then certainly in areas where there's lots of water use, then it should be varied.
Okay.
So that's one of the main things I think ought to be changed in the coastal plan. They seem to have done quite well on the surfing. They've actually put in surf break protection areas that go out to the edge of their jurisdiction. They're 12 nautical miles.
Yeah.
So those look as though they're fairly well protected from.
So you can't do anything
in terms of the prevailing wind. So.
You can't do anything out there that would affect the surf break.
Yeah.
So even like some seabed mining.
Well, there is a distinction between national surf breaks and regional surf breaks, because ones like Manu Bay are national surf breaks, and ones like the area to the north of the harbour are just regional surf breaks in terms of a definition. And that they say that there can't be any harm to the national surf breaks, but there can't be any significant harm to the regional ones. And anyone's guess is as good as mine as to what significant means.
Maybe a judge would decide on one day, but maybe not as well.
Yes.
Yeah, that someone's got to be prepared to spend the money. Okay, anything else you're putting in for the... or anything that someone in a last-minute panic might want to do with the coastal plan submission, which closes at the Regional Council today?
5 o'clock this afternoon.
Five o'clock, yeah.
You need to have a look at the Regional Council's website and find their form for filling in submissions. And if you want to have a look at the Whangaroa Environmental Defence page, Facebook page, then you'll find what WED is proposing to put in. And you might want to copy or refute some of that.
You've got a bit there, add a rule to avoid privatising the coastal edge. Sounds worthwhile.
Well, that's one of those that they're proposing to oppose their own rule. They've decided that they've repeated it too often, so they've decided it only needs to be in there once and not twice.
Okay, right. That's just that's like rationalising the document. What about... So you've got stuff about Maui dolphins, marine mammal sanctuary. Who actually administers that marine mammal sanctuary that we've got?
Well, it was the I think it was the national government introduced it, and the Labour Green government that extended it and added the extra rules about it, like no seabed mining in it, and the various other protections that are in there. And it seems to me that now that we've got a national government back, then maybe regional council needs to be adding its own protection to make sure that what we've got at the moment actually remains.
Okay.
Because we have, as you say, got the Maui dolphins, and they are one of our most endangered species.
What about aquaculture? Is my understanding that you just didn't... They say we're creating regulations for aquaculture, which sounds what you want, but actually they're opening it up to aquaculture?
Yes.
Right. Do we care? Is it a problem?
Well, it can be, and it would be good to... the suggestion that WED has put in is that it should be banned on the West Coast, but I would expect that that might well be negotiated to some strict regulations.
So what's the problem with the West Coast? Just because you live here? Or
because it's hardly here at the moment. So we've got a proposal for one just north of the harbour entrance.
Yeah.
And we've got a small mussel...
Mussel spat farm?
In Carfia Harbour. But apart from that, I don't think we've got any aquaculture in this area. Because the proposals in the coastal plan focus on the area around Thames and Firth there. So that's where they've particularly been looking at, and I think they've pretty much forgotten us over here as far as those rules are concerned. But it could be a problem.
Accidentally end up enabling aquaculture off our coast.
Yeah.
Because they forgot we were here.
The Marlborough Sands in particular have been having problems with aquaculture and the pollution that can come from it.
Okay, so what sort of pollution do you get? Is it because it's a monoculture?
Because it's monoculture and you've got a lot of fish being fed in a small area and all the waste that comes from that.
Ah. So before I was saying how fish poo in the water and that's okay, it's not if there's...
If you've got lots of them in a small space and you're trying to fatten them up.
Yeah, so that's, again, it's a dysfunctional ecosystem. Normally in the sea there are things that process poo that comes out of the fish, but if there's too much of it, then it can't do it.
It's pollution. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So because I don't know enough about aquaculture even to start a discussion about it. But it's that monoculture.
I'm not an expert on it either. But I can see what I've read.
Yeah, I can see that the intensity of it, and yeah, that's an issue. All right. I don't really want to go through your entire submission.
Yeah.
Ah, stuff about Canada geese. People would, yeah, that's an issue. That's been a big issue for the farms around the harbour. Big issue.
Yeah, because it wasn't in the original WED submission, but somebody asked for it to be added in. So that's gone in there as something that is worth mentioning. I've seen far fewer of them around recently, so somebody must have been doing some culling. But anyone I talked to doesn't seem to be sure who's been doing it.
I remember Ross Wallace on the community board was saying that a few months ago there had been some, although I think he found it quite dispiriting because it was like you'd put a lot of effort in, you get a lot of them, and then more come back.
Maybe the information just come through as to who's done it.
Craig's just texted us, salmon farms get fed waste from slaughterhouses, which raises algae bloom risks.
Okay, thank you,
that
Craig.
That sounds fantastic. That's exactly what we want. So have you submitted about that, John?
Yes, well, not about the slaughter of waste, but about not having aquaculture on the west coast. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, so that's an issue too. Yeah, it's very well to have these farms. Where are they getting their food from? I guess that's their palm kernel equivalent for aquaculture. All right. Anything else you want to mention, or should we move on to?
I think we've probably covered the main things. So, say if people want to put in submissions, it's probably easier to follow somebody else's submission and amend it to fit what you want to say. So have a look at the draft one that you've just been looking at on the with a link from the Whangarei Environmental Defence Facebook page.
Okay. Now you were talking about our internationally famous surf break here, internationally protected. That's at that level of having national protection.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the boat ramp that's in the middle of it. And well, it's not really in the middle, but it's in there. And you've put on the Facebook, should Manu Bay boat ramp get $2.2 million spent on it in the next long? So folks, the long term plan's been reviewed. This is the council spending plan spread out over 10 years. It gets reviewed every 3 years. It's in the process at the moment, and it will come into action July next year. And so this is about spending $2.2 million on the boat ramp because the last job they did didn't work. Basically, yep. for that break wall. And now some background to that. I had Shaw Mead in the studio, and I said I need to understand, because the problem that we've been told is that the break wall changed from being a vertical one that reflected the waves back to being a slopey one, and the waves enables the waves to wash over and wash boulders over. That's my understanding, and I'm not the expert, but that's my understanding. But because it's a protected surf break, you can't put that vertical wall that reflects the wave back. You just can't do that. So are they going to spend $2.2 million creating a higher wall with a slopey face on it, John? Is that what's going to happen?
Well, they've not said how they've reached the $2.2 million. Because as far as I understand it, the experts are still discussing what the design ought to be.
This is the experts that have taken a year pretty much to come back with something.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And the last I saw, I think, was that it was still being peer reviewed. So,
yeah, I know our community board chairperson Dennis Amor has been extremely frustrated with this. It's out of his control. And it's also, I think, there's the issue that the engineers are the same people who are working on fixing stuff up from Cyclone Gabrielle. So there's quite a lot of workload out there in the industry. Doesn't help us. But so, John, all we know is that they're suggesting, well, it's a draft document, so they probably are going to spend $2.2 million.
Well, that's what they're proposing to allocate in the long-term plan, so yes. And that's going to be spent over 3 years, 2025, 26, and 27. And they do say it could cause increased coastal effects, and they explain why they want to spend $2.2 million, saying it is proposed to fund this project because of the level of community interest, support, and commitment from council.
You mean
to make the repairs?
Community interest meaning the fishing club has been getting lawyers on the onto the council's backs.
Well, that's my interpretation, but
yeah, no disrespect.
I'd like to know whether there genuinely is community interest, or whether, as you say, it's just the lawyers from the fishing club who've got an interest.
Yeah, I mean, the fishing club has been campaigning hard on this one, and no disrespect to the fishing people, but I know that the whole community is not united behind this need for a boat ramp at Manu Bay at all.
Some of the surfers would rather not have a boat ramp at all.
Yeah, and the way that the boat ramp's there now, but John, you've described how the boat ramp came to pass back in the day, which was not how you would do a boat ramp these days in a new location.
Yep.
So it's a difficult issue.
There's always been a conflict between surfers and boaters there. Ever since that reserve was opened up about, 60 years ago.
Yeah, and 2.2 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, you could do an awful lot of other things with it, which council says they can't afford. So you could buy some more sports fields, or you could run more buses, or you could do a structure plan. You could do all sorts of things that we've been asking for, and council have been saying, we can't afford that.
So we should have sued them, John, for a structure plan.
Maybe. Yeah. Or maybe we ought to. And when it comes to April next year, we're going to actually be consulted on this. And if by that time some people have been saying, hey, it's not that greater level of community interest, then maybe we might get somewhere. But whether we'll get that money spent on something else, I don't know. It might just disappear back into the council funds and not get spent here at all.
Part of the thing that sets up the conflict is there's an awful lot of people who use the boat ramp, but most of them are not from here. So I'd love to see some boat ramp charges. I think, yeah. And that's coming, isn't it? Yeah, it's coming.
Well, it may be.
It should be higher. Should it be higher out there? If they're going to spend ratepayers' money on that particular boat ramp, which is in a location which is not a sensible place for a boat ramp, unless you're going to spend a lot of money, should that cost not be put onto the users and not the rest of us ratepayers who don't go fishing? Serious question, John.
Yeah, because certainly the community board was promoting that at one stage, but I've not heard anything about it in the long-term plan.
It was submitted to something, wasn't it? What was it submitted to? Was it a bylaw?
I can't remember now, but it was probably a couple of years ago when the community board was discussing it. At that stage, they were told, oh, it needs to be in the long-term plan.
I remember something about an $80 a year fee or something.
Oh, that was mentioned as a possible figure, yes.
Yeah, like Dennis Amor drafted something up and submitted it on behalf of the community, or as the community board.
Because most boat ramps have got fees around the rest of the country, but not on our boat ramps. And so far I've not noticed any mention of that in the long-term plan documents, but it could be that it's coming up because they're gradually working their way through the long-term plan with a series of council workshops. And it's only since the Ombudsman produced his report on secret workshops that they've started giving more information about what is coming up in the workshops.
So we've got... Because like the thing I keep observing is that because of the popularity of fishing over here, we've got lots of out-of-town people coming to use the boat ramps, and we've got all sorts of problems caused by the parking around the boat ramps. We don't have a decent place in town, certainly. The soccer fields are used to park on, and that's ruining the soccer fields because it compresses the soil, makes it hard for the grass to grow, and it creates undulations where there's soft spots. And as usual, the kids come second.
And it increases the pooling that happens when it has heavy rain.
Yeah, like I'm quite annoyed about that. As always, the kids come second because they don't have a voice. But the fishing club's very loud and rowdy about what they want. And just because they're noisy, in the end, they get what they want, which is for all the people who are not ratepayers to park on the fields that the ratepayers' children play on. Like, yeah, I just don't think that's on. So I think we should be charging people who are not ratepayers more to come and use our stuff when it's creating congestion problems.
Yeah, because one of the...
I'm sure I'm not making friends. Some quarters of town, I'm not making friends by saying this, but yeah.
Because one of the other things that was in the same council workshop was that they were saying Additionally, with the effects of climate change, there is a need to acquire additional sports park land in Raglan, with the football fields at Papahua and the Raglan Recreation Reserve suffering from more frequent flooding due to increased weather events, poor drainage and the proximity to the harbour.
Does it say anything about the fact that they're too small?
Well, they're saying that's why they need to acquire additional land, yes.
Someone's texted me, said, can we charge the out-of-town surfers too?
Maybe we just need to have a toll bar up at the top of a divvy. Yeah.
That's long been a popular idea. Yeah, well, that is a thing for holiday spots, is that the infrastructure needs to be, I mean, the same goes for our sewage system. Our sewage system has to be designed for a town of about 12,000 people because of the amount of people who are here for a couple of weeks over Christmas, but it has to be able to cope with that. And I don't know, John, is there any history of our council going to Hamilton City and say, come on, your ratepayers should be paying for this, they've all got badges out here?
I think all they pay for is a quarter of the bus service. So council pays quarter, Hamilton Council pays quarter, and government pays half. But there's that small contribution.
It's a very small contribution. Yeah.
Don't even get free use of Raglan libraries anymore.
Don't we? We used to be able to just go to the Hamilton Central Library as ratepayers in this district.
And if you live in Whatutu, you still get it, but not if you live this side of a divvy.
Okay. I could just use my mother's library card, I'll be all right.
I'm introducing lots of red herrings to this.
You are, yeah, I know, I'm still doing how to handle this. In the end, what I've come to is we're speaking about the issues of being a tourism town, and there's lots of extra costs that are landed on the ratepayers because of that. And so then the question comes in, we start talking about a bed tax, John.
Yeah, well, again, that was discussed by the community board and seemed to be quite supported. And, of course, Queenstown's had one for quite a while.
One thing I've noticed, where Queenstown goes, we follow. They're a lot worse than us in terms of the cost to live there are insane, and the lack of housing is much worse than ours. But we have the same problems and following in behind them. And at one time, a few years ago, their problems were about the levels ours are now.
But again, like the boat ramp charges, I've not seen anything so far, but it could be that they're having a future workshop on charges, which they haven't done yet.
Yeah, bed tax. I think it's really important because we've also got the issue caused by Airbnbs that have... I mean, Airbnbs aren't to blame for the housing crisis. There's a housing crisis all around the country and even around the whole Western world because of the economic policies that we've followed since about 1984. But the level of Airbnbs in Queenstown and here is a problem. If you've got an Airbnb in the room out the back, that's one thing. But houses that are sold and become just permanent Airbnbs from people who probably don't even live in Raglan as the owners, the landlords, we're getting problems with that.
Yep. But maybe I ought to put $2 million in context in council spending. So they're talking about putting the cost of roading up from $103 million a year to $147 million a year, which is to cover the problems with the cyclone and various other things to do with the maintenance of the roads. So it's a 41.56% increase in the amount that they're proposing spend on roading.
So was it 102 to 147?
103, almost 104 to 147, yes, just over.
But that's a yearly cost?
Yes.
Yeah, that's serious, because when Clint Baddeley was our councillor, the council at that time made the decision to stop extending the sealed network. So not every dirt road was going to become a sealed road, which had almost been normal life in New Zealand, to keep extending the seal. And they stopped that because it's just getting too expensive for the benefit. But now that's a massive increase. And that must be causing some cuts somewhere, John. What have they cut to do that?
Well, they're cutting the street cleaning So that's a marginal cost.
There's not $40 million worth of street cleaning happening in our district, is there?
No. Well, they're saying that rather than have regular street cleaning, they'll do it as and when people ask for it. So if there's a problem with your street being dirty, then they'll send somebody along to clean it.
Right, so the people in the well-off areas will complain more regularly and the people in the poor areas probably won't. That's usually how that plays out. And so the poorer towns will look worse.
Right.
Yeah, okay. It's a juggle. Like, I get it, it's a juggling act. I don't know quite what they're going to do, but that's an alarming increase, alarming diversion of ratepayers' money. Maybe there's a lot more ratepayers in the district, though, as well.
Well, yeah, we are steadily increasing the number of people, which is why we need a structure plan.
Cause I wouldn't say, the whole district, I wouldn't say steady up north, because Pokono has gone from 500 to 5,000 people or something crazy like that. So,
because one of the other bits of information I came across was that they've just spent $354,000 for a structure plan in Narawahia. And in the long-term plan, they're proposing $50,000 a year to do such things over the coming 3 years. So
where are we in that queue? Because I've seen, I've downloaded a document about structure plans in the area of Narawahia, and their projected population growth is flat, it's almost flat, whereas ours is huge. Ours is to this, by 2070, 12,000 people living urban area here.
Rather than 3,000. Yep.
Yeah, I don't understand how we've fallen down the queue on this structure plan, unless it's to do with the day they came out here with a grand vision to turn Raglan into Mount Maunganui and got roundly abused by the locals and decided they'd never come back. I don't think we should have abused them. I don't think that was on, but I also think they should have talked to someone from Raglan. Just one person would have been good. You know, they might have told them that plans that make Raglan look like Mount Maunganui wasn't going to go down well, but someone barreled ahead with that idea at council over a decade ago, and ever since then we've never heard. The planning department hasn't come back.
Well, it seems to me we either ought to have a structure plan or we shouldn't have growth.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But that's not going to happen either, but I get your point, right?
Because if we don't know what we're going to do with the extra 9,000 people and where they're going to park, where they're going to shop, how they're going to get their power, how they're going to get their water, sewage, everything, then it's just going to be chaotic.
Yeah. So I did ask the planning department about a structure plan, but it wasn't a specific enough answer for me. But Dennis A. Moore has suggested,
I would say they're allocating $50,000 a year for it, and they've spent $350,000 on the Narawahia one.
So I think we should just do our own.
Well, we haven't got $350,000 unless we pinch it from the boat ramp.
Yeah, that's not so easy, though, is it, in council? You can't actually just like swap money around like that.
That's what we're talking about at the moment, where it should be allocated.
So. Oh, so yeah, at this point, it's hypothetical spending, isn't it?
Yeah, and the problem is that when it comes to April, when we're officially allowed a say on it, then most of it will have been decided, and it will be quite hard to change.
Yeah, and like Dennis has already said, Dennis Amor, the community board chairperson, it does look like, because he gets to go in behind the scenes, it does look like we're down the list on the structure plan thing. And folks, the reason for the structure plan, like here's a great example that came up, was we want this land-based sewage treatment. There's a proposed site, and it's only proposed, and it's looking less and less likely at the moment, for land-based treated wastewater distribution up Mangatawhiri Road. So the question then became, how does the pipe get up there that delivers from the wastewater plant? And normally they go under a road, so then you've got to decide what's the roading network going to be like in the future between the wastewater plant and Mangatawhiri Road. And that includes like a bypass around the back of Rangatahi that's probably going to be built one day. So suddenly they had to stop and do some research about what the best way to do that is. Now that information should already have been available, and it should be known to the community that that's the future development plans. But instead last week they actually came up with something. I think Councillor Lisa Thompson has now seen it, so we can maybe find out a bit more about that. But that's not how we want. You know, this is Raglan. We want to say in how our town develops. We want to say if the CBD gets bigger, which direction it gets bigger in. We want to say if in new suburbs what they look like or how they relate to the town. All that kind of stuff, and at the moment we don't.
Yep. Because one of the problems they're facing with the long-term plan is the number of things that are going to cost way more than they do at the moment. So I've mentioned roading, but also there's the Three Waters, which they were hoping they were going to get government help for, but it's now up in the air as to what they're going to get.
I think they're going to, although who knows how the negotiations are going for the coalition at the moment. Not that great is what I'm hearing. But someone did say, like someone like Chris Bishop did say something about, like they said nothing about anything, famously, but it did say something about like Three Waters. I think it just has to happen. Like our councils cannot afford to do the work that's required. We've neglected our Three Waters systems for a few decades now, and you know, how many more $1,000 a year on rates can we all afford?
Yeah, because I mentioned the 40% increase in roading, but for the Three Waters, they're proposing to increase the spend from $63 million next year to $162 million in 2027, and steadily increase it over those years.
I guess they're doing that to send a signal to central government that this is so that central government can total up what all the councils think the costs are going to be.
So over these 3 years, it's going to double, or just more than double.
Yeah, more than double. Yeah, and that's and that is
that but that's funding,
and that's because we haven't done our maintenance because we've been obsessed with getting rates down. Long story there, but yeah, something has to happen. And Lisa's been really clear about that when I've interviewed her. She said it's looking bad. Something is going to have to give.
And that they've got other problems looming as well, because they mention the airfield rear area up at Memorial Drive and the issues with the treaty claims and various other claims. So they say they do talk about public consultation, but they also mention that in terms of costing quite a lot as well. So they say a council resolution was passed in 2023 to investigate the options to return the Raglan airfield to the rightful owners. To give effect to that resolution, we'll need to carry out investigations, undertake costly surveys, seek Māori Land Court and Te Arawhiti advice, engage with the relevant Crown departments, incur legal costs, and likely run extensive and potentially contentious public consultation processes. And they say much the same about Riria Kariopa Memorial Drive as well. So those are another two things to add on to the costs.
Yeah. I know there has been some progress with that. I think there's a joint management agreement being developed between the rightful owners and council at the moment for the airfield. I think it's the airfield. I haven't got precise details about that. Something's happening in that space anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was July last year when they announced it?
We knew it was going to take a long time, because that's the jurisdiction legal carry on around that piece of land is complicated anyway. So, and they said that we're likely to find, I don't say the word fishhooks, but they're likely to find complications and fishhooks as they work through the process. They did say that, so I'm not surprised it's taken a long time. Although having said that, there's probably not one person who that's all they do. It's probably work gets spread around. John, what else do we want to talk about? We've got 10 minutes.
Lost my place now. Walking and cycling gets a mention in there. The tune of $1.3 million a year for the whole district, which seems to me to contrast with the $2.2 million they're talking on spending on one boat ramp.
Oh, John. Oh, yeah. You've made that look as bad as possible. Quite easily, too, I just concede. Okay, what do you think?
There's lots of things that are crying out for money, and the council has these huge increases in spending. So it seems to me that there ought to be a lot of debate about it between now and April, when we're going to be formally consulted, and that really we ought to be saying what are our priorities. And I'm sure lots of people have got all sorts of different ideas as to what money ought to be spent on, and there's probably some people who just say it shouldn't be spent at all and we should save on the rates.
Well, Well, there are always people who say that, who their free reflexes to moan about the rates, but there is a connection between the services we get and the rates we pay, so we should keep that in mind.
Because one of the other things that always concerns me, I suppose, is that we have these pictures that they present in their documents, like the one you've got on the screen at the moment, which shows some windmills up on the hill and a bike and a bus and people walking, not a car in sight, and that they present these pictures, and yet what they're actually proposing to do is nowhere near what the pictures portray.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're just not going to do that, are they? They're not going
to show. It does suggest that they know what people want, but they don't intend to do it.
Well, there's a multi-story building there, John.
But one of the other things that probably we ought to discuss is the complaint that we had, which was saying that I was far too anti-council.
Don't say we, John. There was a complaint you had, not me.
It was about what was on the radio, saying we in terms of
Yeah, it was sent to you, though. So someone thought you were being too hard on council. Someone who has worked in council before, I can't quite remember the detail. And so you promised to discuss if you're... The point of this now part of the interview is to discuss whether John is too hard on council. Do you think you're too hard on council, John?
No, otherwise I wouldn't continue like that. It does seem to me that council, as we've just been discussing, has lots of problems, but the part of the problem is that they don't actually get out there to talk to people about it. And as you say, partly that's because they've had bad experiences in the past.
Yeah.
But we've got a whole load of new staff since then who haven't actually come out and talked to us. And we've got even apparently councillors complaining that they're not getting the feedback from the community that they think they should be getting. So a bit around that, it seems to me that there's a whole opportunity to actually get council and community working together rather better, and that if we complain about things like that, then we might eventually get there. Otherwise, if we keep quiet, then they just say, oh, well, everyone's satisfied. They don't actually need anything other than a boat ramp.
Do you think... Oh, my mind's gone blank now. Do you think that the connection with the community should be the number one priority, and then council business, as we call it, getting all the services done, should come in behind that?
Well, they should be linked. There's no point in providing services that aren't satisfying what people want, and providing things that people don't want and not providing things that people do want. And of course, when you talk about people, then there's always going to be individuals who want or don't want various things. So it's quite hard to sum up what a community does want.
It is notoriously difficult. I think the community board quite a few years ago now did a thing where they asked people what their top five things they wanted done in Raglan. I thought that was quite good, because people will accept that. They'll accept that, well, it was a community vote and the thing I wanted is down the list, but a visible process happened and they participated. But back to whether you're how mean you are to council, John.
It seems to me that our council doesn't do at all well, and I hark back from time to time to the voting turnout figures, which usually put us down at the bottom of the list, which suggests that we're not connecting with our community.
We are low compared to other councils, but all the
councils usually.
Yeah, all the councils are low. I think there's a structure.
Well, we're worst of a low list of councils. Yeah,
I can't remember this discussion I heard somewhere. There's a structural problem around our councils. I think they've been given, like, central government keeps giving them more and more things to do, and then we've got the economic situation where the common people are becoming poorer and poorer, and that's like the bottom 90% of income earners, and money's off somewhere, often venture capital funds and places like that. Not venture capital funds, they actually do something constructive. Anyway, there's not enough money circulating where the rates come from, so council's been squeezed from every direction, and there's also the problem that the councillors don't have a lot of control over council staff. Technically, the council employs the CEO, and the council can talk to the CEO, and that's it. That's the formal relationship. And I think that's a real disconnect. And as competent and smart as council staff may be, they don't share the values of all the people out in the community. And in fact, most of them don't even live here. And I think that is a cause of a disconnect.
Well, also that there's a big turnover of staff and there doesn't seem to be any effective induction going on, or not sufficiently effective. People come in and they don't actually know what's happened in the past. They don't know what's been done. They don't know what needs to be done. They just come along with their own ideas and try and implement them as best they can. And I think that's part of the reason why we've got high staff turnover. That it's quite an unsatisfactory job to be in that position where you've got a lot of work to do, a lot of responsibility, and you're not given the tools to do it.
People need autonomy. Like it's well documented now that the most significant factor in terms of whether you find your job fulfilling or depressing is how much autonomy you have. Uh-huh. And the staff working for council, I mean, they're all pretty smart people, but there's a disconnect there. And like, because I don't like getting stuck into staff. There's very few staff that I would get stuck into at council in a personal way. I think they feel that you do get stuck into them, John, because I've got to get this conversation back into your approach to council. I think they feel like you're a bit like a dog with a bone and you won't let go, and it takes up a lot of their time.
It sometimes achieves results. We have now got this information we've been talking about this morning, and if I hadn't been pushing for it, we probably wouldn't have done, and it's still fairly patchy, so I'm still trying to get some information that, according to the Ombudsman, should be available, but which at the moment isn't. So,
yeah. As you know, John and I disagreed about the definition of a council workshop when it came to the civil defence planning thing. Like, I agree with you that the workshops should be publicly, there should be public knowledge about the workshops. I didn't think that was a council workshop in the conventional sense.
We'll find out next week or later this week.
When is it?
Because on Friday.
On Friday? I haven't got it in my diary. I've been really worried I've missed it.
Yeah, I managed to miss the wind farm meeting because it wasn't in my diary.
Because I was going to ask you about that too. But are you going to change your ways, John? This is what the listeners want to know.
Probably not, no.
Okay. All right. Well,
in the last minutes of the show, can we briefly talk about the election outcomes?
You're changing the subject, are you? Because I'm like pressuring you too much. All right. Election outcomes?
So it was a week last Friday when we got the final results.
Some election data.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got a minute.
And to say that the Taranaki King Country results show much the same as the national election, that there was a move from National and ACT towards Labour Green and Te Pāti Māori.
In terms of the special particularly count.
In the Hauraki Waikato constituency, there was a move from, there was a move even from Labour to Te Pāti Māori amongst the special votes there.
Yeah, so just a leftward swing in the specials.
Yeah, and we're not going to get the detailed results for what happened in the town hall here until the end of the month. So maybe we'll talk about that in 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks' time.
Having been in the town hall with a young person from my family, there were a lot of young people sitting in the queue for special votes who decided to enrol on the day. So,
okay.
Yeah. And I see politicians complaining that it takes too long, but, I mean, what's another week, really? I was quite peaceful. The politicians can't do anything to us at the moment. It's quite peaceful while they're off negotiating.
Yeah, I've got some doubts about the cynicism that's been shown about it being peaceful when there's no politicians around. It does tend to devalue the decision-making that goes on in political circles.
Well, there's important decisions being made right now.
And I'm not saying that they're going to be good decisions, but I'm worried that they're not going to be. But
I'd love to be a fly on the wall. I've been saying all along through this election that the party that is most opposed to ACT is actually New Zealand First. It's not Te Pāti Māori or the Greens, because Winston Peters set up New Zealand First to maintain his objection to neoliberal economics. And the Greens have kind of accepted that that's the reality we live in, and Winston is still saying it's not good for us. And it's not good for us. It's really, really obvious the divide between rich and poor is huge, that even a guy from a right-wing party, like Winston originally was, is objecting to it. But I think my original comment that they are bitterly opposed it's also played out in their personalities as well between David Seymour and Winston Peters. So God knows what's going on.
When Jim Bolger was deposed, then there was quite a major change in the National Party at that time. So, and Winston represents that pre-revolution.
Well, Winston represents pre-Bolger. He really represents the Muldoon way of doing things, which was. See, people have got to understand there was a big PR campaign against the way Muldoon did things. And this has happened all around the world toward doing things the neoliberal way. We just had to change, apparently. And critics at the time said it would increase the divide between rich and poor, and it has, because that's what it was designed to do. It was designed not to create a divide, just to increase the wealth of the rich. So, yeah, Winston was opposed to that.
So that we all benefited. But they
no, well, that's what they said. Yeah, but that's what they said. But that's just the rationalisation. And it was obvious to those who understood the economics at the time that that's what would happen. And it's now obvious to most of us that it has happened. So Winston's even before Bolger, but Bolger was pretty... Bolger went along with neoliberalism because he didn't have a choice. But he got rid of Ruth Richardson as soon as he could.
Yeah, well, I suppose the main difference there was that the Blue Greens went into a minor position in the National Party.
Well, they always were going to be minor, though, weren't they, John?
Well, we had our own MP, Simon Upton, who's now the Commissioner for the Environment, who was going to introduce a carbon tax and things like that way back.
Yeah, have you seen the documentary Hot Air?
Don't think so.
It talks about all the skullduggery and the PR and all the stuff to prevent anything being done about climate change while he was the Minister, through Peach Hodgson and the Helen Clark government was the Minister. Yeah. It's an interesting. It's a heavy on detail, but yeah, it's instructive. Should we go, John?
We've got often raglan issues, so maybe we ought to go out and get home before it starts to rain.
It looks like it's going to rain, doesn't it? You're on the air tonight at 6.
Yep. Still to work out what I'm going to do.
Okay, all right. But more details, folks. John always brings the detail. That's what I say. All right. Thanks for coming in. Okay, folks. Time for me to go. I'll see you tomorrow.